This is Frank Maloney with Jim Hobgood, and we've got our good friend Elton Brown with us today. And thank goodness I've got a bodyguard right here in case there's ever a problem. He's right here, 6'6", 325. In a matter of moments, I think we're going to have our buddy John Copper on the phone, former UVA linebacker. He was a walk-on, grew up out there in Roanoke, of all places, and decided to bypass the schools out that way and made a little trip to Charlottesville and walked on and proceeded to lead the team in tackles for three consecutive years. Not bad for a walk-on linebacker. He wore number 54, 6 feet tall, 230 pounds, played at Northside High School before coming to UVA, led the team in tackles in 2006, 2007, and 2008. John, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am. How you doing, Frank?
All right, man, that's great. This is a miracle of modern technology. All right, John is in Charlottesville, and we're delighted to have him joining us here. And we got Elton right here, so Elton might jump in here with a question or two in a second. John, first off, as always, it's good that you could join us tonight. Obviously, as a walk-on, and then ending up as a starting inside linebacker playing in the 3-4 defense. Virginia's now shifted back to the 4-3, which is a more conventional defense. Talk about the linebackers for UVA that are playing now and maybe what they have to do now as compared to what you had to do in the old days.
I think the biggest difference between a 3-4 and a 4-3 is a little more complexity and I guess gap control. And what I mean by that is the pieces tend to fit together a little more precisely, that if somebody's kind of out of order there in a 3-4, it'll show up a little more, whereas a 4-3 lets guys run a little more. And some people might say it allows you to make more plays. I guess it depends on what kind of scheme there you like to follow in the 3-4 or the 4-3. So that's probably one of the main differences.
Hey, John, this is Jim Hobgood. Now, if you're a linebacker and you got an offensive lineman like Elton Brown, do you make sure you're on the other side of the field when he comes out there and lines up?
I wish I could. And that was the other difference in the 3-4. The 3-4, it was my job, all 220-some pounds of me as a freshman, to take up Elton Brown on a typical play. So that would be another difference there. So.
I just want to know how you survived that, because practices must have been a nightmare for you.
I don't know. I know I iced my neck a lot, and I know after I know once I got a little older, I don't know how that works, that you're able to get by practice without quite as much contact as you are your first year. So,
well, Elton's sitting here saying that you took practice too seriously. He's got that Allen Iverson, Jim Hobgood attitude toward practice.
It's funny. All the older guys, Elton would tell me that, Brian Bosselmus, Alvin Pierman, they would all tell me I took it too seriously. And of course, I was just telling them I was trying to earn a paycheck. And then, once I got to be about a third or fourth year myself, and started playing in games, I would say the same thing to the younger guys. So I think that's just how it works.
All right. All the kidding aside, let's talk about the linebackers this year for Virginia. Number 9, Leroy Reynolds, has been shifted from really what would have been a safety position to play outside linebacker. They've moved in just the last week or so Aaron Taliaferro from inside linebacker out to the outside position. They've got Darnell Carter playing more now, substituting back and forth with Steve Greer on the inside. And Alzer Walcott and Jared Dietrich are playing the weak side linebackers. So obviously the coaches, Coach Reed and everybody, they're trying to find the right fit and get the chemistry. What are your thoughts on those players?
Yeah, I think each of those players definitely has a lot of potential. Each of them pretty skilled. I think we're fortunate to have, you just listed six guys there. All of them have gotten a good amount of playing time this year. Of course, last year, I think Steve Greer and maybe Jared Dietrich were the only two that got much any playing time to speak of. But, it's just good when you got six guys that can work together and any one of them can come in there and play. I've seen most all those guys make some different plays this year. So, I think they're fun to watch, and I think as they get to play more throughout later this season, it'll be more of more fun to watch.
I think Elton has got a question for you about that defense.
What's going on, John?
Biggie, how you doing, man?
I'm all right. Long time.
That's good. Yeah, it has been a while. We'll have to catch up here soon.
Yeah, we will. My question to you, being a walk-on, what was the toughest challenge you faced?
Toughest challenge? Probably scout team against Elton Brown on Tuesdays. one thing about Coach Groh, and I tell everybody this, he was extremely fair. And I knew coming in to play at UVA that I was going to, if I could compete with the guys that were already on the field or the guys that were going to be on the field, if I could compete with them, I was going to get a fair shake at playing. So I knew coming in that I was going to have a fair shot if things opened up for me, and they did. I'd say the biggest challenge, honestly, was just what we were joking about earlier, is that, you know, every day you got to go. As a walk-on, you know, you can't have off days. It's not a thing where they're vested in you for two or three years or that sort of thing, and you have an off day or an off week or that sort of thing. It gets brushed over. If you're a walk-on and you wanna take the next step, you know, it's kind of a thing where you got to be there to perform every day. I would say that'll probably be the biggest challenge that, you know, I faced. You know, Matt Snyder's out there running around this year. I'm sure he faced the same thing playing with him, and just different guys we've had: Hall Simmons, Staten Joe, Byron Glasby, guys that have walked on and ended up playing in the past. I'm sure they'd say something similar.
John, Frank, back again. You've watched the football team this year and watched them going through some growing pains and so forth, but they have put together a couple of decent wins, and now they're getting ready to play a fairly formidable opponent in Miami Hurricanes. What might be the psychological challenge for the linebackers coming into this game, and really the front seven in general? They've got to defend a fast bunch of skill players, a relatively accurate quarterback who's got good feet. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think, you know, anytime you play Miami or a Florida team, I mean Florida State for that matter, you're looking at speed, and it's a matter of being able to match speed for speed. And I wouldn't be surprised to see some different schemes and that sort of thing. That just, again, really let the linebackers run this week. See some guys running sideline to sideline, and that's, you know, honestly, it's more of a mentality. I mean, some games, you know, when you step up, you're thinking, hey, this is going to be between the trenches. They're going to run right at us. And then when you play a team that's built on speed, you just got to go with the mindset that you're going to be running the whole game. And it's just, you're going to try to be faster than the guys that are maybe on paper faster than you. So that's probably the biggest thing. You just got to have the mindset that, hey, I'm going to keep up with these guys, and I'm going to try to beat them at their game.
Now, this is a quarterback. He has speed and quickness, but he throws a lot. I mean, he's not necessarily a guy that wants to tuck it in and run a lot. Is that I'm trying to think of watching Miami play, as opposed to a Tyrod Taylor at Virginia Tech, which must be a nightmare for a linebacker trying to prepare for a quarterback like that.
It does. It's definitely, because, you know, when you're playing linebacker, I mean, obviously you're thinking run first, but on pass coverage, you're a big part, especially if they're throwing down the middle or on the seams, kind of deep over the middle, that sort of thing. You know, your inside linebackers are going to be a big part of that. And when you're dropping your linebackers and then you got a quarterback that will run, you know, there may be some open space in the middle. So that's definitely a different dynamic. I think personally I would rather play against a quarterback that's, more going to sit in his pocket and make his reads and that sort of thing, and trust that my defensive lineman will be able to get in there and get a good pass rush on him, and maybe make him make some mistakes that he wouldn't normally make.
John, talk to us about maybe your favorite play as a Cavalier. We always like to go down memory lane here and give you an opportunity to describe maybe your favorite moment as a Wahoo.
My favorite moment or my favorite play? Is that the question? Do I have the question right there?
Moment, yeah, there game, go. Play, yeah. Whatever.
As an athlete.
Gosh, probably favorite moment, I would have to say it would be against Miami 3 years ago. We went down there. It was the last game in the Orange Bowl. And guys just played great. I know Chris Cook had a fumble return for a touchdown. Jameel Sewell played a great game. We ended up winning that game 48-0. And I would say best moment as a Cavalier, that one sticks out. And then a little game that probably made more people nervous than happy was Middle Tennessee State. We went down there on the road that same year. Ended up being a nail biter that I think Chris Gould ended up kicking the winning field goal. I know Keith Payne and Andrew Pierman had touchdowns in that game. So that was also, you know, it was just a really neat environment. I know it was a game we probably should have won by more than what we did, but in terms of being on the team, being engaged with the guys on the team, those two games stick out. There were several more. I know we beat Florida State at home that one year. There were others I could throw out there, but those two kind of stick out.
Well, it's got to be, you know, I'm sitting here looking at some of the media notes here, and it's got the top 15 tacklers in the history of Virginia football, and you're in that list as a walk-on individual that came to the university. So, that I mean, that's quite a tribute there. A lot of linebackers on that list. I guess the linebackers are supposed to tackle people. I guess that's the nature of the job, huh?
It is. And, people would always tell me, they ask me about lead the team in tackles, but I tell them, I say my position – in the 3-4 scheme, I was often unblocked, and my job was to make tackles. And if I wasn't making tackles, then there was something wrong with the defense. So I tell people it's kind of by default.
John, we appreciate you joining us tonight. We thank you for calling in. Look forward maybe to having you again down the road. Good luck to the Hoos this weekend. I'm sure you echo that.
I will echo that. I'll be there. My little brother's coming up, so we're going to tailgate a little bit and have a good time. But, hey, I really appreciate you guys having me on. And, yes, sir, do look forward to maybe doing this again in the future.
We'd love to have you, John. Thanks
Absolutely.
For coming on.
John Cooper, former linebacker at the University of Copper. Sorry.
All right, John, thank you. All right, we're lucky tonight to have none other than Dr. Gordy Rawls. He's always been Gordy to me. Dr. J. Gordon Rawls, Jr., to be technical about it. He's an orthopedic specialist with West End Orthopedic Clinic. And Dr. Rawls is an expert in hand and wrist repairs and, I guess, the whole lower arm, correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. We're going to just briefly gloss over offensive tackle Landon Bradley. Recently had right hand surgery. We're going to come back to him. He's been wearing a cast. If anybody went to the Eastern Michigan game, you could see him on the sideline with a big old club on his right hand. Offensive tackle Morgan Moses sprained his ankle with about 6 minutes to go in the game. I'm told that it's minor. That's just word of mouth. Unfortunately, our all-star ACC, all-ACC candidate, cornerback Razai Dowling, has missed another game with knee problems, now having overcome hamstring injury. Running back Reynard Horn is wearing a knee brace, but he's still playing and doesn't seem to have lost any speed. Safety Rodney McLeod is still playing, but I know he's twisted a knee. And at cornerback Chase Minifield has, I think he bruised his quad on a punt return in the last game. Anyway, Gordy, any of your thoughts about any of those injuries?
Well, certainly, we don't get as much information. I know you all don't get as much information about the specifics about injuries as much as maybe we did, 10, 15 years ago, mostly because of federal laws, privacy laws. I think that's the main reason. So we don't have anything real specific. I might just mention playing some of the factors that go into playing, in particular with a hand injury. We have ways of, fixing a broken bone internally, such that the hand would be functional day-to-day use. But when it comes to grabbing a 300-pound defensive lineman and being able to use your hand, I don't care whether you have a cast on or not, you've got a lineman like Landon Bradley would be very limited by not having one of his hands to grasp with, there are a couple different ways they can protect the hand. Certainly you can, a cast can be applied with very light materials that is, impact resistant, and you can leave the fingers free. However, if it's a significant injury, you can imagine in a pileup, down the bottom of a tackle, somebody can be grabbing on one of those fingers and twisting on it, and the cast really would not protect you from that.
Right.
Now, there's another type of a cast that is sometimes used, and I think there might be an implication that he might be playing with a fist cast,
right?
Which is, same thing, but with the fingers folded down into a fist and essentially taped down into a fist so that nobody can grab hold of the fingers.
Right.
And I don't think Jim Hobgood could have played like that, but...
Well, I couldn't play, period, but I mean, you know...
I'm talking about basketball.
Oh, yeah, okay. But no, it would limit it. You know, the one thing about hand that I think about it from a football standpoint, a lot of times quarterbacks in the motion of throwing, you know, they'll hit somebody's helmet or hit something like that that can really cause a problem. And that the quarterback certainly would be the one position where if your hand is not fully functional, you're not going to play.
Correct. I mean, the University of Virginia has a fantastic sports medicine staff, which started years ago with Joe Geek and Dr. McHugh backing him up on the sidelines, or one way or the other.
Yeah, I remember they worked, them well. They were there.
They worked as a team, and you know, there are lots and lots of ways to get people ready to play nowadays beyond what was available then, which was basically just some, you know, simple types of casts, foam padding, and tape.
And cortisone and Novocaine.
I'll pass on how frequently that was used, but certainly it is something that's occasionally.
Gordy, you touched on something that I think is very interesting. Back after you were a double Wahoo, University of Virginia Med School in 76 and UVA undergrad prior to that, but then you came back and you were the chief resident in 82, and you trained under Dr. McHugh, didn't you?
I spent a lot of time with Dr. Frank McHugh. He's a wonderful man and very dedicated to, you know, keeping athletes ready to play. You know, he was really a pioneer in setting standards in sports medicine, certainly in Virginia and really around the country.
Yeah, we're with Dr. Gordy Rawls. We need to take a break right now. We'll carry him over the break, if that's all right, Doctor. So we'll be back after these messages with Dr. Gordy Rawls of West End Orthopedic.